The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Joanna LaForgia from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting content from the January-February issue of Southern Living Magazine. This week, we're going to hear from two regular features in the magazine. One is our friend the Grumpy Gardener, and the other is Ivy Odom's Kitchen. All right, briefly, the front cover of this magazine is, we are looking down at a rimmed baking sheet that's vertically placed on a table, a burnt orange with some brown, soil brown streaks in it. And that matches the color of the chicken wings on this pan. They're on a paper that's black and white checked. And the chicken wings are that echo the burnt orange and the dirt soil brown color of the table. And they appear to be moist as well. And they're charred. They've got some burnt kind of edges to them, or crisp, I should say, crispy edges to them. And there's some pickled chips interspersed among them. And at the top of the pan, as we're looking down at it, on the front cover, there is on either side, there are two of those white round serving cups. They have a name, listeners, and I'm sorry I can't recall what that is. But there are those two white porcelain brown serving cups. One is filled with coleslaw. It's kind of piled high, the coleslaw in that dish. And the other are baked beans. And in the center, there are some celery sticks and a bit of what appears to be blue cheese dressing that's streaked with some of the barbecue sauce coming off the chicken. From the top to bottom, the print is Southern Living, and that is in a nautical blue. And it says, the wing list, 20 best chicken wing spots in the South, which, listeners, you can hear if you refer to our last episode, which is a podcast on our website, plus winning Super Bowl recipes. A hobby garden, across the bottom it says, January, February 2026, a hobby garden in full bloom, the rich taste of chicory desserts, and the cheeriest home in Florida. All right, we settled in for the Grumpy Gardener at home. This is in the at-home section of the magazine. The magazine's divided into sections of in-season, at-home, and the South, and the kitchen. So we're now in the at-home section. The Grumpy Gardener, which always begins with a cartoon. And here we have it. It takes up almost half page, about a third of the page. There's a cartoon of a small house with a pitched roof, some trees in the background, green trees. It seems to be summer, and a lighter green, like a lime green lawn, and some hedges that match the trees in the background. And then there's a fire burning, appears to be, in the front. And it's along what might have been a fence. Yes, which along the fence is burning here in this cartoon. And there is a hapless man with a fire extinguisher spraying some of the flames. He's just in between the front door and the flames, the fence there. There's a little walkway to the front door. He's standing there. And he has a dog, a frightened dog, peeking out from behind his legs. He's wearing blue trousers and a brown turtleneck long sleeve shirt. And the caption of the cartoon is, upon further reflection, Roy decided he hadn't really thought through his fence project. And this is by Steve Bender. He's the Grumpy Gardener. Dear Grumpy, I'd like to put up a fence around my house and garden to keep out the deer, but don't want to spend the money to hire someone to do it. We're by some woods, so I thought about making a brush fence myself using all of the sticks and branches lying on the ground. What do you think? Signed, Roy. And Grumpy's response? It's a great idea if you want to turn your house into a raging bonfire. A brush fence consists of two parallel rows of wooden posts or metal stakes that are set 12 to 18 inches apart to corral dry, dead timber. Looks natural, doesn't it? That also provides shelter for small rodents and birds, until, of course, it goes up in flames. But as it's cheaper than hiring someone, don't let me stop you. Keep your homeowner's insurance policy up to date. Next question, long shot. Any tips for growing asparagus in a raised bed in northwest Florida? Signed, Leslie. Yes, move about 600 miles north. You see, asparagus doesn't like long, hot summers and short, mild winters. In other words, it doesn't like Florida. But if you're determined to try, start with 2 to 3 year old crowns of Mary Washington or Jersey Knight, and that's K-N-I-G-H-T, asparagus. Plant them in early February, placing them 18 inches apart in the bottom of a 10-inch deep trench. Cover with 2 to 3 inches of rich, fertile soil or composted cow manure. As they grow, keep adding more soil or manure until you eventually fill the trench. Asparagus is a heavy feeder, so fertilize in spring and again in summer with a balanced option such as 10-6-4. Don't pick them until the third year, provided you have something to harvest. If you don't, plant peppers. Peak pruning. Is it time to cut back our hydrangeas, or should I wait a few weeks? Signed, Jan. When to do this depends on the kind of hydrangeas you have. Reblooming types such as Endless Summer can be trimmed any time because they flower on both old and new growth. Prune those that bloom only on new growth, such as Panicle Hydrangeas, Vanilla Strawberry or Limelight, or Smooth Hydrangeas, Annabelle or White Dome, in winter and early spring. But for those that flower on old growth, like Oak Leaf Hydrangeas, Ruby Slippers, and certain Big Leaf Hydrangeas, Nikko Blue, and that's spelled N-I-K-K-O Blue, for those, I'm going to go back to the beginning of the sentence, listeners, because I might have lost the flow for you. But for those that flower on old growth, like Oak Leaf Hydrangeas, Ruby Slippers, and certain Big Leaf Hydrangeas, Nikko Blue, wait until summer. In general, people prune these plants too much and too often. Removing dead growth should be the main concern. You'll know how much of a branch is dead by locating the topmost bud on it that swells in spring. Cut back to just above that point. All in the timing. My peonies are too shaded to bloom, but I don't know when to transplant them. Help! Signed, Nancy. Moving peonies in fall when they're entering dormancy, but still above ground, is best. That time is over, but you can dig and move them now, if you know where your plants are, before the new foliage emerges. Disturb the roots as little as possible, and plant at the same depth as they were previously growing. Do not hire two men in a backhoe. That's initial caps, listeners. I've heard a lot of complaints. Fiddling around. I have a fiddle leaf fig that is nearly touching the ceiling. How do I cut it back? Signed, Sally, with an IE. Grab a pair of sharp pruners and a paper towel. Trim back the offending branches as far as needed, cutting just above a leaf or bud. Figs exude a sticky substance from their wounds, so wipe that off before it drips on the floor. And we have a Grumpy's Gripe of the Month. And that, listeners, is always accompanied by a small drawing of Grumpy typing on an upside-down wheelbarrow. He's using that as a desk. His blue typewriter sits on top of it with a yellow sheet flowing out. And the wheelbarrow, we said, is upside down. It's red. And he is sitting at a chair before it, his hands above the typewriter, looking grumpy, but he's looking over at a flower. The yellow flower is personified. It's got some big orange lips smiling at him. And it has long green leaves, one of which is holding the page down from the wind, I suppose, and the other of which is an arm around Grumpy's shoulders. Grumpy's wearing a blue shirt and some tan trousers. He wears glasses, and he's got brown hair and a brown mustache and beard. And kind of a big nose, but this is a cartoon. It could be a caricature. And a grumpy grimace. Okay, and here's the gripe of the month. This gripe does not apply to 99% of you. But read it anyway. It is a consequence of what I call Facebook syndrome, a behavioral disorder that reduces the attention span of a human being to that of a housefly. To wit, about every week I feature a new plant that I think you should know about on my Grumpy Gardener Facebook page. The text is short, about 100 words, and within the first three sentences, I tell the name of the plant and how to grow it. I realize that asking some folks to read all the way from the first word to the last is utterly futile. Invariably, after only a few comments, someone asks, "What's the name of that pretty plant? How do you grow it?" Enough. Let it be known from this day forward that any request to repeat myself, because your tight schedule can't accommodate reading 100 words, will be ignored. Grumpy has spoken. So shall it be. And finally, in the right-hand column, there's always a small feature called Know Your Plants. And there's a picture, a white picture, of flowers that are kind of trumpet-shaped blooms. And they are of red, rose red, and a pink, a dark pink, almost magenta, and some sunset orange and sunrise yellow, sunshine yellow are others, and some white, and some magenta or purple. And these are called Alstromerias. But let me spell it in case I mispronounced it. It's A-L, S as in Sam, T as in Thomas, R-O-E, M as in Mary, E-R-I-A-S. Vibrant blooms for your Valentine. One of the least expensive and longest-lasting cut flowers begs you to take it home. A beautiful thing about gardening is that you can learn something new from practically anyone, even your wife. Just kidding, ladies. Among other things, Judy has taught me to always duck when she picks up a rolling pin and to never sit with my back to the window. A while ago, she started bringing home these exotic cut flowers called Alstromerias. They come in seemingly endless hues, and many are bicolored. Plus, they last 2 to 3 weeks in a vase or vase. She buys them at Publix for $5 a bunch. So, if you're still paying a king's ransom for cut roses, you should take a tip from my missus and opt for Alstromerias. Signed, Steve Bender. And that's our Grumpy Gardener this month. Now we'll move on to Ivy's Kitchen in the in-season section of the magazine. And this begins with a full-page photo of a breakfast casserole that looks quite edible, listeners. Appears to be cheesy. Well, we'll find out very soon, but it's golden. It's the golden color of a late afternoon sunshine, and the edges are toasted crispy to a darker orange. And it is garnished with scattered pieces of, it looks like, chives. But we'll find out soon. Scallions. Cut up tiny pieces of scallions. And it's in a white baking dish, deep baking dish, square, a rectangular dish with white handles. And there's a spatula that has a corner piece upon it that's just been lifted out of the rest of the casserole. And it's sitting on a brown table, mahogany brown table, and there's a tablecloth that is light brown with a print of soil-colored browns, flowers and leaves throughout it. And there is what appears to be a pitcher and glass of orange juice bleeding off the edge of the left edge, upper right left edge of the photo. The caption is Mama's Breakfast Casserole, which we'll hear more about in a moment. And then, as always, there's a picture, a circle profile picture. It's a small circle of Ivy Odom's portrait. She has long brown hair, red lipstick, and it's parted on the side, her hair, brown eyes and brown eyebrows, and she is wearing large blue hoop earrings, sapphire blue hoop earrings, and it matches the blue on the print of her blouse. We can just see the collar, a bit of it, but it's a bold, large floral print of red, pink, and green. Okay, Mama's Secret Casserole. In my family, no visit is complete without Sabo's signature breakfast dish. Sabo's is SAB-O. And this is by Ivy Odom. My mama Sabrina is one of the best cooks I know. She can easily make something out of nothing, pulling seemingly random bits and pieces together to create a delicious meal. Because her cooking style is so spontaneous, she doesn't keep a roster of go-to recipes. If you like a Sabo special, our family's name for her concoctions, good luck getting it exactly the same ever again, with one exception. And listeners, I'm going to skip over the rest of this intro just to get to the recipe to be sure we finish that before the episode ends. All right, and then we'll return to it if we have time. Mama's Breakfast Casserole, which is a green chili egg casserole. The active time for this is 15 minutes. Total, 1 hour 35 minutes. And it serves 12. Here are your ingredients. 12 large eggs, a half a cup of half and half, half a cup of all-purpose flour, 1 1/2 teaspoons of baking powder, 1 24-ounce container of whole milk, small curd cottage cheese, 3 4-ounce cans of diced green chilies, drained and patted dry, 5 tablespoons of salted butter, melted, 1 teaspoon of kosher salt, 4 cups of shredded pepper jack cheese, 16 ounces divided, and thinly sliced scallions. Here are our steps. Step 1, preheat the oven to 350 degrees Fahrenheit. Lightly coat a 13 by 9 inch baking dish with cooking spray. 2, place eggs, half and half, flour, and baking powder in a blender. Process on medium speed until smooth and slightly foamy, about 30 seconds. Transfer to a large bowl. Step 3. Stir cottage cheese, diced green chilies, melted butter, salt, and 3 cups pepper jack cheese into egg mixture just until combined, and transfer to prepared baking dish. Cover with aluminum foil. And step 4, bake 45 minutes. Uncover and sprinkle with remaining 1 cup pepper jack cheese. Bake until center is just set, but still slightly jiggly, and cheese is browned around edges. That's about 20 to 25 minutes more. Remove from oven and let cool 15 minutes. Then garnish with scallions. Whenever we gather, it's all but guaranteed that Mama's green chili breakfast casserole will be on the menu. Anytime my husband and I visit my parents in South Georgia, the pre-cut squares are waiting in the refrigerator for reheating in the morning. When Mama comes to our house in Birmingham, the casserole is always in tow. Beach vacations, she packs it in a ready-to-bake aluminum pan. I asked her for the recipe, and she gladly shared a note from her phone that had clear instructions, which I followed to a T. I pride myself on being a great cook, but unsurprisingly, mine turned out nothing like hers. When I called to ask about it, her response was, "Oh, I never follow the recipe. I just do whatever my heart tells me." Classic. Come to find out, Mama adds half and half, plus double the amount of baking powder that was listed. She also mentioned, if the eggs are small, I sometimes use more. I'm convinced that I'll never be able to make the dish as well as she does, but my version, which is in the recipe we just heard, listeners, my version comes pretty close. Sometimes the best meals have less to do with the ingredients and more to do with the cook. And in the case of this Sabo special, I think that's her secret. Okay, but it appears, listeners, as though our recipe contained the revisions that her mama used. I think, yep, she even said large eggs here. So I don't think we'll go wrong if we follow that recipe, which, again, I think you all remember you can find at any time, just going back to it on our website, to this broadcast, which is going to be a podcast, so that you can refer back to the recipe if you need to. The website, of course, is ncreadingservice.org, and you skip to podcast section. You go to Southern Living, which should be under magazines, but you might find it under newspapers if our volunteer tech team hasn't gotten to reposition it yet. But it's there in the podcast section, Southern Living. All right. Ivy's pick, she's got some favorites from the Southern Living collection at Dillard's, which you can find where she likes to serve things in. Some scalloped cluster bowls. This grouping of serving dishes works for game day or mahjong night. $120 at Dillard's. These are round, scalloped-edged plates, as you might imagine. They appear to be white porcelain on the inside, and the outside is a gold color. Can't tell what material it's made of. Next, she has a Caroline Collection utensil crock, a cylindrical place that you can stand your kitchen tools in. Tuck your kitchen tools into this hand-painted vessel. It's blue and white, listeners, kind of a colonial blue, yes, with some flowers scattered on the white. And it's rimmed in a ribbon, kind of looped print on the top and bottom. And finally, cabbage plates. And there are 3 of them here, listeners, and they are imprinted with leaves of cabbage head. So they're, when I say imprinted, what I mean is that you could feel the texture of the cabbage leaves there in each of these. They're three different sizes. Cabbage plates available in blue, green, and pink. These pieces will dress up any table. And they do, listeners, have edges that rise around. They're round, of course, and they have edges that kind of rise. So they start at $24 for a set of two. We have just a couple of minutes left, so we'll start a piece on the Locals Guide. In the Locals Guide, some regional favorites. This is called Counterculture. These beloved diners keep the South well fed from morning till night, by Tara Masulik McKay. And we'll start the first one, Sunliner Diner in Gulf Shores, Alabama. The past is alive and well at this 1950s-themed restaurant that has the chrome booths, checkered floors, and red vinyl seats to prove it. Sunliner serves breakfast all day alongside tasty options for lunch starting at 11 a.m. and dinner. Have your pick from classics like omelets, waffles, patty melts, country fried steak, and milkshakes. And don't forget to bring a few quarters for the jukebox. With their second location in Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, and a third spot that recently opened in Orange Beach, Alabama, Sunliner's charm is reaching even more of the South. And the diner in Norman, Oklahoma, nostalgia fills every corner of this Sooner State treasure, where vintage photos of chili cook-offs and other small-town mementos cover the walls. Owner Bonnie M. Thatcher's father opened the diner in 1989, but the building itself has housed restaurants for over a century. It carries on Oklahoma's long-standing tradition of chili parlors, and it's even been featured on American Diner Revival and Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. You can enjoy Frito Chili Pie, their famous Eggarito Breakfast Burrito, and other tempting offerings 7 days a week. And listeners, we've run out of time for today's episode of Southern Living. Hope you enjoyed it, and hope you'll listen next time. I'm Joanna LaForgia, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. So long until next time.